Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
To listen without ads, head over to patreon.com/rightandwrong.
Ooh, a spicy question. I
because
love it.
Because the writing is sort of everything, right? Like, you can fix plot holes, but if the writing is
so some readers love that, and some readers are like, but I wanted more of this. So it's kind of a gamble.
Hello, and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. If you are a longtime fan of the show, or you've checked out the other podcasts, The Chosen Ones and Other Tropes, you'll know this week's guest. Well, she's an author of dystopian fiction with a side of romance and a bit of comedy sprinkled on top. She's also a part of the amazing team over at Write Mentor. Very happy to welcome back my good friend, Melissa Welliver. What's up?
Hello. It's I.
She's back.
I'm back.
And your latest novel, your second novel with Chicken House, Soulmates and Other Ways to Die, is coming out March 14th. Tell us. I already know about it. But for everyone listening, what's it about?
Yeah, so this is usually the worst question, but this one's actually quite easy for me to sum up. Maybe I'm learning. Maybe I'm growing.
I'm getting there.
So it's about people who live in a world where everyone has a soulmate and it's predetermined who your soulmate is. But if they die, you die and vice versa. And you also feel their pain and they feel your pain. So if you break your leg, they feel pain in their leg, for instance. If they fall unconscious, you fall unconscious. So it's exploring a world where the dangers of that are magnified. So for instance, there are instances where somebody falls asleep at the wheel and causes a huge pileup because their partner maybe was unconscious at home. Or if they don't even know who their person is, then that person fell unconscious. They don't even know who that person is. So they wouldn't know that they were unconscious. It's causes quite a lot of chaos. So it was really fun to write. And it's about the main characters, Milo and Zoe. I've got a dual perspective going on again. And of course, they are complete polar opposites and hate each other. So maybe they actually love each other. Maybe they're soulmates. Buy the book and find out. Who knows? So yes, following these two teenagers as they're trying to work out whether it's best to choose who you love or whether it's best to be told who to love. So there's a lot of themes about love and the right kinds of love and all love is good. Love wins. It was really fun.
Love conquers all.
Yeah.
You know what's cool? What I just realized by you saying, oh, this is usually the worst bit, because I understand authors love to talk about everyone's books other than their own. But when you have like a high concept thing like this, it makes it so easy when someone's like, what's the book about? And you're like, oh, it's set in a world where soulmates are a thing. And, you know, if one of them dies, the other one dies. And it's like, that is just a cool concept to set up. And then that trickles down to stuff like this. Agents and editors love, because for the same reason that you can very easily and simply say, I'm really excited about the story, I wrote the story because this is the cool concept I came up with. They can also say that to the like rest of the team. They'd be like, oh, this is the really cool concept. Then they can, you know, sales and marketing can be like, oh, this is how we market the book. It's a really cool concept that people can very quickly understand.
Yeah, I think saleability with the pitch, a lot of people don't realize. So I saw a thing of Kezia Lupo, who's been on the pod and stuff. She's an agent now in the US, and she was talking about, she did like a thread a few weeks ago. She does loads of really good threads, if you don't, guys don't follow her, that are all about like the industry. And one of them was people worrying, when is my book ready to go on submission if I'm with an agent, or when is it ready to go out to agents? And she was saying, of course, it shouldn't be messy, but concept is king. And I think, you think that that's only the end product, say when maybe a publisher is pitching to you, the reader, in like, say, a Facebook ad. So it's like 50 words and they've got to pitch you the book. But actually, it starts all the way at the beginning when you're pitching to an agent who has 350 manuscripts across their desk every single week and they sign seven people a year. And they have to try and organize all of those manuscripts. And some of them, they just will not have time to put in the full effort to read the full. It's great if you have a really good pitch at the top where they're like, oh, I understand what that's going to be about. That sounds intriguing. I'm going to dive straight in. Then they can sell it to the editor. Then the editor can sell it to you, the reader.
It's the same thing for the editor, right? Because the editors are swamped with submissions from agents.
Yeah.
and for them to be like, okay, that's an interesting concept. Let's put that on the to read later pile or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. Anyway, it's a cool concept.
Thanks.
And it's I've not encountered that as like an interesting way of doing the kind of soulmates predetermined thing before. The way that you've set it all up, there's a lot of consequences for their various things. It's kind of one of those worlds or like ideas that you tell someone, a sort of like, what if? And then you can kind of go down so many rabbit holes with it. You can be like, oh, but if this, then that, and then these people with this, and then someone will probably take advantage of this and do that. There's sort of an infinite number of situations and dynamics that you can explore. Were there some cool kind of interactions that you had to sort of, just for like time and space, had to leave out of the book?
Oh, that's a really good question, because this, I had to cut this down a little bit. So this book is, if you guys are intimidated by the chonky length of My Love Life and the Apocalypse, because I think it's like 85,000 words or 380 pages, something like that.
Okay.
This one is slightly shorter. I think just the pacing and the action scenes, it needed to be pushed on a little bit. But I can't think of anything actually I had to cut in terms of the interactions. There was something I added. Which I didn't think of actually. All credit to Shala Valapour, who is my editor for this book. So we were quite late through edits and just thinking about, is there anything else we want to add before getting to line edits? So if people don't know, you do developmental edits, which are like big overarching things. And then once you're pretty happy with the text, you do line edits where you're sort of going line by line, and you really shouldn't be adding or subtracting a lot at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And something she thought of that I hadn't thought of at all was, if girls have period pains, do boys have period pains? Because if one feels pain, the other feels pain. I was like, I hadn't thought about that. And I've got a gay female couple that's quite a prominent side characters in the book. So they have a conversation with Zoe, the female main character, one of the point of views, about this. And they have a whole conversation about, oh yeah, you know, and then our periods sank up, but then that was worse because it was even more painful because we were getting this echo pain from each other's periods. And it was just such a fun conversation to write. And then of course I've got Milo there, who's feeling a little bit sheepish, but is of course a lovely golden retriever character. So he does join in the feminist conversation about periods and does mention that he does indeed sometimes feel some stomach pain once a month, and did not occur to him that it could be period pain. So that was actually really fun to put in, and that was Shalu's idea.
That's a great little detail to throw in there. It's details like that where it's will have almost no bearing on the overall story or anything like that, but it like makes the world feel more real because you're like, oh yeah, that is a thing that would happen.
Oh gosh, yeah, it's so true, isn't it? Like when you're writing, I think there's a lot of stuff where, especially female readers, if they're reading dystopian or post-apocalyptic stuff, and you do start to think, why aren't their armpits hairy? They haven't been shaving their armpits in this apocalypse. Or why have none of them had a period? It's been 3 months. So it is something that sometimes is nice to at least touch upon and be like, yeah, don't worry, these are normal people.
Yeah. If you can do it without it being just like a kind of filler thing. Because it's like, you don't want to be reading necessarily like your kind of epic adventure, hero's journey thing. And then it's the same thing as like, you watch movies and stuff and no one ever like goes to the loo, right? Because it's not, unless it's done for a gag or a laugh or like specifically there's a reason to move, to like remove someone from a situation. It doesn't happen because it's like, we don't really want to watch that. You know what I mean? We're here for the adventure.
Yeah.
But it's funny. That
not the toilet adventure. So.
Yeah, exactly. that's middle grade. So we'll leave that in the age group. And I know kind of a bit about how you approach your ideas and writing and stuff like that. Am I right in thinking you like to sit on an idea for like a few months before you commit to writing it?
Yeah. So, essentially when I am plotting something, I sometimes say it's taking me several months, and people think that's me like sat at the document typing stuff out for several months. That's not true at all. I'm quite lazy when it comes to bum and seat at computer desk, typey, and I shouldn't be, but I am. I do a lot of thinking before putting it down on paper, and lots of notes in my phone as well. So yeah, this was something I sat on for a few months. This was actually, I now seem to do this thing, I don't know where it's come from really, where I write a book every January. This seems to be a thing now. It's done it 3 Januaries in a row. So this was January 2023's book So I wrote it in 30 days in January, but it was only, I think, about 65, maybe 70,000 words, the first draft.
Okay.
So I plotted out all the chapters, and I did have to do that because it's a very short time frame. And I think I ended up, because I did about 24 chapters, 12 for each character, I think I ended up doing about 24 days of actual writing. So I did have some gaps in between where I wasn't writing every single day. Whereas this past January 2024, I did write every single day, and that was part of the challenge, whereas this wasn't necessarily as much. But yeah, I pitched it to my publisher in November and then spent NaNoWriMo plotting it and then sat on it for a month in December.
Okay, so I forgot whether it was a one or two book contract. So it was a one book contract with Chicken House. That was My Love Life in the Apocalypse.
That's right.
Then you pitched. Did they sign a deal off the pitch and then you wrote it?
No. So I pitched it and they said they wanted to see more. And to be fair, they were saying like maybe looking at a sample or something like that. But I knew once I'd started, I could probably just get at least a full draft-ish out. I'd already had the idea for the story. And sometimes it can be so easy to think, oh, I can only write something if it's contracted. Whereas I wanted to write this anyway. So I thought I'll set myself the January challenge. I'll get it written anyway. And then if Chicken House decided it wasn't the correct fit for their list, I could take it somewhere else if needed. I decided to write it out anyway. And that timeline worked quite well. And there just happened to be a slot 11 months after the last book had come out. So they picked it up February, March last year. And obviously it's coming out in March this year. So It was quite quick turnaround.
Yeah. It's interesting that you say there's a kind of, once you've been published, there's kind of a feeling that you couldn't write something if you weren't under contract. But it's funny when I talk to a lot of authors and they talk about it's often the second book, because obviously with a first book, a lot of the time you've spent, you know, maybe years either writing that or kind of building up to it by writing other things and then writing that. And that book has had like all of the space and freedom of not being on any kind of schedule or anything like that. And then when people come to their second book and they're kind of, you know, you have to work off kind of a pitch with the publisher if you're under contract or whatever.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of stick to that. And you also have deadlines, you have a timeline, you're working with an editor the whole way through and things like that. People often struggle to adjust to that different thing. Did you find kind of when you thought to yourself, okay, I'm just going to write this, even though I'm not under contract, was there something a bit freeing about that? Or did it make you nervous?
So there was part, because they'd already approved the pitch, and also because I was on a one book contract, I did really want to make sure that I got another book contract. I did feel a little bit of pressure, and it did feel in some ways like it was on a contract, even though technically it wasn't, because I don't know if people know, but like the timeline between getting a book signed and like it coming out, I was worried I wouldn't be able to get into the 2024 schedule because it was already, you know, end of 2022. The beginning of 2023. So I was already worried. My brain. So I was already worried that I wouldn't be able to get into the schedule in time. So that was throwing me, because I had a book coming out in 2023. I wanted a book to come out in 2024, but I was only really thinking about it end of 2022. And it seems silly because I still had 6 months at that point when I was thinking about it, sort of September 22 until Love Life came out, but I was already thinking, oh gosh, there isn't actually a penciled in schedule at all for me to have a second book because it's not a two book contract. Whereas often when you have a two book contract, they will at least try and schedule you in as long as you can meet those deadlines consecutively for the next year.
Yeah.
So it did feel a little bit like that. But also what was quite nice, so that kind of put the pressure on to do this little January challenge, but also it was a little bit freeing that I knew I could have a bit more fun with it. Like, this is quite a fun book. It's quite a daft book. It does have some, like I say, some serious themes. I do talk a lot about different types of love and control versus choice. And those are the big themes of the book. But there were lots and lots of just fun moments where I could just, you know, do some fun action scenes. That's what I like to do. So I think I had like a nice balance of both because it technically wasn't under contract.
Okay.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You said you had, it's like I had, you had a good balance, but also like a part of you thought it was like, felt like it was kind of a contract, but okay. Yeah. So it was a bit different. Getting onto your, getting back onto your kind of writing, you touched on it a bit earlier with kind of gestate on an idea for months and you're not necessarily plotting at that point, but you've been on the podcast several times before and famously or infamously, depending on how you look at it, you are very much a planner. And you talked in depth about that on a previous episode and the specifics of your planning. Has that process changed at all for you, or is that still the system you're sticking to?
It's still pretty much the system I stick to. This one, I mean, obviously within that system, there probably is a scale of how plotted things are. This one was slightly less plotted. I had each chapter and one sentence for each chapter, and I had a lot of it in my head. I think because I've done this so many times now, and this is like, I don't know, whatever number book I've written. There's loads of books I've written that will never see the light of day. A lot of it stays in my head, and because I use Save the Cat and I write commercial fiction, and so it follows like a particular hero's journey, I don't necessarily need to write down absolutely everything because I know what's going to happen, because I know roughly the order. I did still do my calculator maths. I worked out how long I wanted the end bit to be. I worked out how many chapters I had. I worked out which beats had to be hit within each chapter. But some of the action scenes I wasn't as strict on this time because I wanted it to be fun because it wasn't under contract. So technically speaking, if I didn't get it finished by the end of my January challenge, it was only challenging myself. I wasn't technically letting anyone down or missing any deadlines or anything like that. So I knew I could have a little bit more leeway to sort of have fun with the action scenes in particular. So it wasn't as plotted as usual, not as much as, say, Love Life was. Or I did one, I did another January challenge this year and wrote sort of a completely uncontracted crossover book, as they're called, a crossover, whatever that is at the minute, sort of new adult, I guess, in American terms, whatever. And that was really heavily plotted because it was 90,000 words in 30 days. So I had to be really, really strict with myself. But this one wasn't as much, no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it sounds like the system was very much similar. It's just that, I guess, like you say, you've done this so many times, it's almost like second nature. You don't need to write everything down because it's just ingrained in your head while you're
exactly. Like, I'm sure if you or Naomi looked, you'd be like, this is so plotted, what are you talking about? But to me, I was like, there's so much freedom.
You're like, wow, it's so loose.
I know, whoa, loosey good. I'm just crazy. So naturally free.
The thing I'm working on right now would upset you to look at, because I've like loosely plotted it. And I think my idea of loose plotting to you is like, no, you haven't plotted anything. But I had, it started off with like loose plot of like 15 chapters. And then I know that I'm going to go all over the place with that. So when I kind of like, I'm like, okay, I didn't do the thing that I originally thought I was going to do in that chapter, and I need to do a different thing here. So I have like chapter 5, chapter 5.5, chapter 5.7, chapter 6.
That's actually making me stressed just sat here.
Oh, God. I knew it would stress you out, and it makes me smile every time I look at it. Let's get back onto you. First time you were on the podcast, first time we met many years ago now, was when The Undying Tower came out.
That fella.
Which you claimed was a trilogy at the time. You have since written two books since, basically, My Love, Life and the Apocalypse, and now the new one, Soulmates and Other Ways to Die, March 14th. Mm-hmm. But we have news for Undying Tower fans. What's going on there?
Well, it's actually going to be a trilogy. Yay!
Wow!
So, to recap previously on Melissa Welliver's episodes of the podcast. I came on, talked about The Undying Tower, and we were doing lots of press and promo for that. So that came out in 2021, near the end of 2021, in autumn. And so we were, you know, pushing quite hard and stuff. And I probably was on the podcast probably sometime in 2021, I would then assume. Then we got into 2022 and I was writing book two because we were going to do a book a year because it was a 3-book contract. And I got a phone call from my publisher and they just said, listen, we're actually folding, essentially folding. They were still doing some of their backlist, which was some classic stuff that they had on their backlist. But they were essentially dissolving all the new books, and so therefore they couldn't finish the trilogy, which was so sad. And at the time, I just got really grumpy and basically just stopped, I think, mid-sentence writing book two because I was so grumpy about it. Which, by the way, I say grumpy, the actual publishers, and especially my editors, Peyton Stableford and Sam Brace, were amazing and very supportive. And in fact, when I stopped being grumpy, a couple of weeks later, they sent me all of the files so that I could self-publish that book. And the hope was to self-publish it so that I could maybe finish the trilogy. And then I found out self-publishing is really, really hard. It's the hardest job you will ever do. Amazing people who make money from it. I would some weeks make £10 and some weeks owe money because of the cost of paper going up, and I hadn't checked my minutely checked all of my sales figures. I'm quite a control enthusiast person. I thought I would enjoy being in control of every element. I actually did not. I found it really drained the creative process, and yeah, was not my favorite. So in late 2022, I did an event with UCLan Publishing. It was with my friends, Amy McCaw and Cynthia Murphy, and UCLan were running the event, and they needed somebody to chair. So I said I would chair, and they said, you can sell copies of your book there. And of course, it was very difficult for Waterstones to get hold of copies. So I took my own copies and I sold my own copies. And they just asked me, you know, so why is it you've brought your own copies? And we just got into a conversation about the book. And Hazel Holmes, who's the head over there, seemed like really keen. So I spoke to my agent and said, can we send it over to Hazel and just see what she says? And yeah, she loved it. Yay. I hope so. Anyway, my God, I'm saying she loved it. Like, maybe, yeah, she did. She bought it, which is exciting. And yeah, we're going to finish out the trilogy. And it's finally been announced because I've been sitting on that since last March. I think it was announced a few weeks ago. So yes, yeah. Long story short, it is coming back out. You may see it with a different purple shiny cover.
But it's still thematically similar, the cover.
Yes, it is very thematic. We went through a few covers. It was an interesting process because UCLan's very hands-on and they give you a lot of input. So I actually saw lots of early versions of the cover. I don't know if that's the same for everyone or whether that's because I was technically self-publishing it. Maybe they were asking me, but you'd have to ask other UCLan authors. But yeah, they were very, very much got me involved with the cover, which was really fun because I was fairly involved, to be fair, the first time around as well with Agora Books, they were called, the original publisher, but not to the extent, I don't think, that UCLan have got me involved. So we're really happy with the cover, yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And it's awesome that it's getting a re-release. Is it going to be exactly the same or will there be, is there like a small round of edits or anything happening to it?
Yeah, so we still have to do a proof edit. I've got lots of time, it's not out till August the 1st this year. So we still have to do a little round of proof edits, which is the very last thing you do if people don't know. But apart from that, I did have obviously the choice and the chance, even before sending it to Hazel, I could have edited, changed it. I decided not to. It was interesting. This was around the time, I was thinking about this because it was around the time that Samantha Shannon announced that she was rewriting The Bone Season and re-releasing. And I was thinking, oh, I suppose I have an opportunity to do that because, you know, myself and Samantha Shannon have a similar legion of fans. So obviously everyone was expecting maybe something different. Mm. And I thought I probably have a chance to do that because I have a very lovely fan base, actually, I'm joking, with The Undying Tower, but it is certainly not as large as Samantha Shannon's fan base. Mm-hmm. And I just thought to myself, actually, this is the book I wrote when I wrote it. This is how I was. And I'm going to be writing the other two books now with everything I know and all the information I know. I would actually rather it was the same content in that particular scenario. And then it sort of picks up because, especially because the main character as well, she's sort of a bit like young, silly author Melissa. She's very naive, the main character, and she sort of learns about the world through stuff that she's experiencing in the book, Sadie. And I just thought, yeah, that works actually for book two and book three, that she would have a different perspective on things and therefore it will be fresher when I'm coming to it from that perspective. So I didn't actually change, which we did like a light line edit just for anything that wasn't caught first time round because it was edited very well by Agora. But No, the content's pretty much the same actually. So yeah, if you've already read it, just don't bother buying another copy. Because
Don't say that. It's got a nice cover.
It does. That's true. And let's be honest, we don't read books. We put them on our TBR. So actually, buy another one.
yeah. Just to go on the shelf. Yeah. And then if someone asks, you can be like, oh, well, this is actually the first one. You can't buy it anymore. It's limited edition.
Yeah, limited edition. Worth loads of money because it's so rare.
So that deal was presumably Lucy, your agent, negotiated it, but it was kind of through you and you kind of prompted Lucy to send that.
Yeah. So I asked Lucy to send it officially, because UCLan, I don't think they're open to unsolicited submissions. I could be wrong. You'd have to check their website, but I think it's mostly through agents. Although I do know a couple of people actually there who don't necessarily have an agent, so perhaps they are sometimes open. But I just decided I wanted to go through like a quote unquote proper submission processing, as I do have an agent. And I was also thinking along the lines of, if I just started something and then I got carried away, and I thought it best to get my agent in on the ground floor and make sure that she knows what I'm doing. So I sort of sat to that, you know, that event was in September, and I think we sent it off in sort of December to read over the Christmas break, because I took a little bit of time to think about it, because obviously, you know, you are letting go of stuff when you are self-publishing, as much as, like, you know, I was being really grumpy about it earlier. There are some amazing things about self-publishing. You learn a lot about how books work, and, you know, I could see if I posted something on social media or changed my, you know, to lower my price of my book or something for a few days and would announce it, I could see in real time the change that that made to the sales of the book. Because when you're self-published, you can just log in and have a look at everything. I did it through KDP and Ingram Spark, which it's like a longer story, but basically Amazon, and then like a distributor that could distribute it into bookshops. Bookshops don't necessarily tend to buy Amazon printed books for a variety of reasons. I'm sure a lot of people can guess. So it is useful to have a distributor as well. I was sort of giving up a little bit. And also I felt a bit disappointed that I couldn't get maybe the sales I needed to produce the next book and get good cover and good editors. And, you know, even my old editors, bless them, they did actually offer, if I got that far, that they would give, you know, me a little bit of editing help without you know, having to pay anything, which was crazy. But I'm glad in the end that I went with UCLan. First of all, because they've been brilliant. Like, they're amazing. And some of the books they produce are incredible. And I kept seeing them in bookshops and it felt like a sign. And I was like, we should send this off. And then, you know, if they say no, they say no. And I carry on down the same path. So I'm glad I took the opportunity. But yeah, it did take me a little while to decide to take the plunge.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's cool. And that's great. And it's cool that those are getting a second chance to come out.
Yeah, literally undying. Well, this poor horse I keep flogging.
There we go. And for anyone who wanted to hear more about Lucy Irvine, who's Melissa's agent, and how they ended up meeting and signing and how that relationship works, they were both on the podcast a while back. I think it's episode 55, if you want to hear what that dynamic is like. Have you written the sequels then? You said you'd half written the second one.
Yeah, so I'm hoping to finish the second one this year. They're all completely plotted, obviously. Obviously, it's me. So they're all completely plotted. And again, it is an opportunity, to be fair, to have a look and see if I still want that arc to happen. But I don't think I would deviate too strongly from it. I do love this series, and I sort of want to serve that fan base that got on board initially. And I knew exactly what the trajectory of the series was going to be when I wrote that first book. So I don't think I want to change anything too drastically, but I was about halfway through book two drafting when the cutoff happened. The interesting thing about writing a sequel, because I've never done it before until then, is it is faster and easier. You don't have to introduce completely new characters that, I mean, my characters in this one I just wrote in January, on the same page, they switch from like blue eyes to brown eyes. I think at one point somebody like just changes gender for one sentence and then switches back again. Like, it's terrible. So it can be really difficult sometimes to keep a lot of threads in your head. But the really nice thing about a sequel is a lot of the threads are really solidified because it's already been through one whole book. So I do hope it'll be quite quick to write up the rest of it, especially because I've already got half. So yes, and hopefully the stuff I wrote a couple of years ago is usable.
Well, I'm sure you'll catch it in the draft. I'm sure you'll tweak a lot of it in the
draft.
Should
be fine. But
I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll be absolutely fine. Okay, it's time for what we normally do at the end of every episode, which is the desert island question. But Melissa's been on many times and she's stuck with her original choice, which is the Argos catalogue.
Argos went under whilst we were talking about that. That's how long I've been doing this podcast. That our catalogue went under, not Argos itself, obviously. The catalogue did go under.
Yeah, it's all digital now, right?
I know.
Yeah. But imagine it did exist. I had a fun variant on the desert island thing here. Since I was fairly confident that you were going to stick with the Argos catalogue, if you had to pick a single section of the Argos catalogue, which section would it be? And don't worry, I've got a list here, so it is multiple choice. Are you ready to hear what the sections
are? Yeah, go on.
Okay, so technology. Mm-hmm. Home and furniture, garden and DIY, toys, baby and nursery, sports and leisure, appliance, health and beauty, clothing, jewelry and watches, gifts.
There are so many sections. You know, I was going to stick with technology because I do love my tech. Like, I have a lot of tech stuff. Like, I've got a big rig PC.
You wouldn't be able to order it. You're on an island.
No, but I like to look at it, Jamie. Like, that's part of the fun. It's like I go on Rightmove and look at mansions. I can't afford any of them. Just window shopping. However, I would choose the toy bit because as soon as you said which section, popped into my head immediately was the Barbie section. Like, all of that bit with, like, the Barbie dream house and the Barbie camp van and, like, all that stuff that I wanted when I was younger. So I think I would actually take the toy section.
Yeah, they've probably got all the new Barbie stuff now as well. Like, I know, Ken's Mojo Dojo Casa House.
Oh my gosh, yes. All the Ken stuff. There would just be a Knuff part of the Casa. Yeah, the toy bit, 100%.
The Knuff part. There you go. We've narrowed it down. Argos catalog, the toy section.
Yeah.
Amazing. I've got some questions about more businessy things, like what happens after the book deal once the books are out and the deal is finished and the next steps for an author. But yeah, we are at the end of the regular episode and into the extended cut exclusive to Patreon subscribers. So anyone listening who hasn't yet joined the Patreon, please do think about it. It goes a long way towards covering the costs of running this podcast. Well, thank you so much, Melissa. That's everything. That's all we've got time for today. It's been awesome chatting with you. It's been great. Excited for the new book to come out, Soulmates and Other Ways to Die.
Yeah, same.
March 14th, bright yellow color cover.
Yeah,
you can't miss
it. But purple spine, guys, if you're looking on a shelf, just to warn you.
It's all about the two-tone. It's the same.
Yeah, it's
as
all about two-tone.
Another Way to Die.
It's true.
Awesome. Well, anyone listening, if you are hoping to keep up with what Melissa is doing, you can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at Meliva. You can follow her on TikTok at Melissa Weliva. And to make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow along on all socials, and you can get the episodes a week early and ad-free on Patreon. And of course, like I just mentioned, for more Bookish Chat, check out our other podcast, The Chosen Ones and Other Tropes. Thanks again, Melissa, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.